I'm very happy now to welcome Corinne Platt. She is co-author of the book Voices of the American West, and she and collaborator and photographer Meredith Ogilby will be at Garcia Street Books this Saturday, January 30th at 2 in the afternoon right here in Santa Fe. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So this is a wonderful, big, heavy, delicious book full of photographs and verbal portraits of people, characters here in the American West. How did you and Meredith start this whole project?
There's a long story behind it. Meredith was looking at doing a project, and she was inspired by several men she knew who lived in the mountains, who were older, who were very humble and very helpful in their communities. And she thought to herself, my God, I have to tell these stories. And we unexpectedly reunited. We were friends, and I helped her with her first book at a Western conference. And she told me what she was doing, and I was interested in writing about environmentalists and what was going on in the West and kind of more in the environmental scope. And we just joined forces, and we started, and that was that. We just wound our way into it.
So how did you start? Who was the first person whom you interviewed? Now, I want to say that the text in this book is not essays by the people whom you portray. It's conversations with them, but kind of with you guys taken out and the people themselves really speaking. But it has very much that spoken sense to it.
That's correct, yes. And we intentionally did that because we wanted this book to be about other people's voices, their words, their stories, and kept ourselves out as writers to refrain from kind of offering that subjectivity. But back to your question, we began with Stuart Udall, which was very inspiring and very scary. A friend, Ed Marston, who is also featured in the book, and is the former publisher of High Country News magazine, journal, introduced us to Stuart when we told him our idea about the project. He took us to his home, and we sat with Stuart, who lives in your area, and I believe is turning 90 right about now. And we sat with him and talked about his experience as the Secretary of the Interior under John F. Kennedy and his whole philosophy about the West.
And where did you go from there?
From there, we sat in a car and bent Ed Marston's ear and wrote all sorts of notes, and he gave us names and contacts. And I had in mind several people who I wanted to speak with, and Meredith had in mind several people she wanted to speak with. But I believe after we spoke with Stuart, we went home, and we got our act together. We contacted people and did our research and probably headed out on our next trip 2 or 3 months later. I can't remember off the top of my head where that was.
The bent of the book is very much toward a kind of conservation and a sense of the West as a place that's both full of incredible natural riches and also very much under attack. And it seems like that's the binding theme to the very many diverse people whom you chose.
I think that's right. I think one of the areas Meredith was very interested in was the ranching communities and what was going on in the kind of the new ranching world, as it were. There's a lot of organizations and individual ranchers who are bringing new information and experiments to their ranches to try to not only save their land, because they really are wonderful stewards of the land, but to keep themselves and their families on the land and keep them ranching. And I think as we learned more and more, we realized that ranchers are incredible conservationists, all of them, everyone we spoke with anyway. And that was a big theme in our book.
Well, that runs counter to a lot of the thinking of at least some conservationists who see ranching. I mean, there's all sorts of battles about ranching on public land and the real problems associated with overgrazing.
Absolutely. And I, believe it or not, I was very much an anti-rancher when we started this book. I really believe they degraded the land and don't have a place in the West. And as I spoke to more and more ranchers who were working creatively, and different applying different land conservation techniques, my attitude really changed. And I have to tell you that some of the ranchers we spoke with are the kindest, most humble people, and they know more about the land than any environmentalist, that I believe. And then Courtney White, who is right in your area as well in Santa Fe, runs the Kavir Coalition, and we went to one of their conferences and were able to learn about what a lot of ranchers are doing on the ground, that are making a big difference.
Yeah, and we've had Courtney White on this program talking about his book, Revolution on the Range, in which amazing things are happening. But it is an interesting thing, because ranchers are, at least many of them traditionally, very conservative people, and they don't like to change the way they're doing things.
I think that's absolutely right. And I spoke with a fraction of the ranchers who are on the land, and I'm sure there are people like that still. But it seems as though there's a movement underfoot, and people are joining on because they really do care about the land. In contrast to that, we have a man in the book named John Marvel, who's with the Western Watersheds Program up out of Idaho. And he's very bold and brazen and really believes that no cow should be on Western lands, period. So we have his perspective in the book as well, which is something that we tried to do, which is, I offered that we try to keep ourselves and our opinions out of the book as much as possible and present different perspectives on what's happening in the West today.
So one of the things that I thought was interesting in the book was people who were talking about how our land use and zoning rules can be very destructive to the ranching life and really basically favor giant suburbias and basically favor development.
Yes, I think that's absolutely right. That is what a lot of people are concerned about in the West, and they're working very hard to keep that from happening, you know, be it off helping ranchers maintain conservation easements or obtain conservation easements so that they can actually hold on to their land, because it's so expensive for them to keep it. Ranching, they're not making that much money, and it's so expensive for them to hold on to it, and they end up having to sell their ranches because, as several people talk about, the kids, you know, that grew up on the ranches don't necessarily want to ranch. They want to go to the cities, and they want to have different kinds of opportunities. And it's very hard for those families to, A, lose that sort of family tradition, but and B, see their land go to other uses like development.
As I was reading this book, and there are so many different people portrayed, it's not a book that you read from beginning to end. You sort of flip through it, and a picture or a name or a paragraph pops out at you, and you read that. All the little portraits are just a couple of pages at most. But one of the things that struck me is that for people who are demoralized and who are looking for role models and looking for success stories and just different ways of addressing the environmental problems we have, this is a wonderful resource.
Absolutely. And I think as Meredith and I began, you know, the process evolved, and as the book grew and grew into what it was, I think that was our big hope, is that people would read it and feel hopeful and feel inspired that maybe they could do something to make a difference as well. You know, even if it's a small, you know, something. We're not talking about recycling, but it's, I think what people offer in this book are different ways to live your life that are, you know, working on problems and trying to come up with solutions, and they're all very hopeful.
Now, one of the people you interviewed was the head of the company Patagonia. And I found that interview that conversation very interesting, because this is somebody who wasn't a business person, didn't mean to go into business, and didn't hire anybody who has an MBA or any business background at all. So they break all the rules.
He breaks all the rules, and he says that several times. And he says, I love it when he says, I think businessmen are real greaseballs. And he says that over and over. But as he found himself a businessman, he realized he was going to be in business for a while. He decided to create a company that would break all the rules and exist as a way to change business policies. And ironically, or whatever, as he says, everything he's done to try to preserve resources has made him more money.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
It totally goes against the common practice. In other words, that if you're going to do something that's environmentally sustainable, it's going to cost you more as a company.
Absolutely. And I think he's such a good example of somebody who, or he's showing us that that doesn't have to be the case. And I do believe a lot of companies are following his lead. I really do. There's a lot of companies out there that are, you know, reducing, you know, reusing, recycling, using that motto. They're doing a good job.
What were some of the biggest adventures you had doing this project? You interviewed dozens of people.
Well, one of the great things I think I speak about it when I wrote the introduction is we went to a commune to visit a fellow named Charles Ford. And Meredith and I, neither of us had been to a commune before, and his directions to get there were so funny. I mean, we were in the middle of nowhere, actually outside of the Gila Mountains right there in New Mexico, and it was the Mimbus Hot Springs commune. And, it was just funny getting there, and his directions said, you know, something about you can't see the house from the road, but look for the 1951 Plymouth with weeds growing out of it, and then take the next left or something, you know. And then we had other adventures where we would always stop and take a hike here and there. And, you know, we hiked up into this area where there's some Anatolian sheepdogs that chased us down into a field of cows, and the field of cows chased us into an old homestead, and we just laughed our heads off. I mean, we had a great time. We had a great time together doing this book. Always on the road. We never flew. We just would, you know, organize our interviews in certain areas, and then we'd hit the road, and we try to meet with four or five or six people at a time.
One of the subjects that comes up, which is continually a controversy in New Mexico, is the subject of wolves and the reintroduction of wolves onto land where there's ranching going on. What did you learn about that subject?
Wow, did we learn a lot. I created in the book a wolf triptych, I called it, and it has three different perspectives on the wolf issue. One is from more of a biology perspective about how wolves have benefited the environment, for everything from the elk populations down to all the little flora and fauna, and how they're really part of the natural cycle. On the other side of that, we interviewed a man who sued the federal government over the reintroduction of the wolf because his ranch was taking such a hit from the wolves. And I learned a lot there. I didn't necessarily agree with this man, but he had a real problem, and his ranch manager had tried to come up with several solutions and took those to the government, and they weren't really having much luck. So, again, I didn't really agree with his perspective, but I felt his pain a little bit. So, I mean, yeah, the wolves are a real problem, but I personally think wolves should be on the land, and that's what I learned. They should be there. I read a book called Shadow Mountain by a woman named Renee Askins, who we also wanted to include in the book. However, she wrote that book about 20 years ago, but it's about her mission. She's perfect for the book. She had a mission and a dream to help with the reintroduction of the wolves, and she almost single-handedly made it happen. And when I read that book, my heart broke for the wolves. So I fell in love with wolves doing the book. How about that?
There is something that comes through this book and that seems to be a theme that's sort of going on many different levels today, if you really look at it, and that is the theme of profound interrelationship, and not just like spiritual, we are all one, but really kind of biological and ecosystem. We are all very much a part of this, and to think of ourselves as separate ultimately doesn't work very well.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, and I think several people speak to that. And Carrie Tempest Williams, for example, speaks absolutely beautifully to the interconnectedness between the landscape and humanity. Most people do. I mean, the words, the eloquence of some of the people in the book are just absolutely beautiful. And I'm not crediting myself at all. These people are speaking their truths, their passions, their feelings, and they're just beautiful. They're just, I don't want to sound trite, but they're stunning people, and they represent our landscape so well.
The book is called Voices of the American West. We're talking to Corinne Platt, who is the co-author of the book. along with photographer Meredith Ogilby, who we're sorry couldn't join us today. We weren't able to reach her, but she will be, the both of them will be speaking at Garcia Street Books this coming Saturday, the 30th of January at 2 in the afternoon. And the book is published by Fulcrum Publishing. Was it hard to get this book published, or what was the story around that?
It was a little bit hard. We sent it out to several publishers. We sent it to 10 publishers. It wasn't finished. And actually, I received handwritten letters back from all the publishers who said, we love the idea of the book. It's great. It doesn't fit our, unfortunately, it doesn't fit our needs. And several of those publishers gave suggestions on who we might contact. And then we had a publishing contract with Northland Press out of Phoenix, or Flagstaff, Arizona. And what is, we were getting underway with them, they were sold, and that publisher helped us find Fulcrum Publishing and get us our contract. So it took a little longer to get published, but I have to say the whole process and working with Fulcrum was amazingly easy, and it was such a positive experience, I think, for everybody. It was great. I don't have any of them. I'm not a writer who has all these horrible publishing stories.
Right. Well, it's a wonderful book, and I hope a lot of young people get to read it, because this is really the story of their elders, and some young people are featured in the book also. There are some high school students and things like that.
Absolutely, and that's what we hope the book is, really. It's a compilation of oral histories, and it should be timeless, and I agree with you. I hope young people are able to read it, and I hope it makes it into some college curriculums as well, because we can all learn from our elders. We know that.
Very much so.
Yeah.
Well, Corinne Platt, thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe, and we look forward to seeing you at Garcia Street Books.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're streaming on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, thanks to Santa Fe's Dotfoil Computer Services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can find me at facebook.com/radiocafe, and my email address is radiocafe@ksfr.org. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team, and after that, jazz.